Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 86 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me, as always, is my absolutely lovely hostess, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron?
I wish to state for the records that I do not wrestle alligators in heels, because that's a good way to break a heel.
Well, you said your back hurt, and I assumed, and you live in Florida, so I assumed you were fighting with alligators.
I haven't been doing that, but I have been very busy. It's been a very busy weekend, and just more of the same here on Monday night. This is Monday, January 20th, and the boogaloo that we expected to happen, not that we really wanted it to happen, although I'm sure some people did, but you and I and other sane people desperately didn't want it to happen, but we were afraid that someone somewhere was going to start shooting or people would get arrested, but it didn't happen. And it was surprisingly civil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, I'm happy, but I'm shocked.
Yeah, I would say alarmingly civil. Just like, okay.
And so I wasn't able to make it, mainly for scheduling reasons. I've got to make a presentation down here in Florida, and I just couldn't take off both weekends. Just not possible. Mm-hmm. But there were at least two members of the Pink Pistols present. One of them is Dexter Guptill, who heads the Northern Virginia Pink Pistols chapter, so he's a local, and he's also a member of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, VCDL, and so they're the ones who have been doing this lobby day since, like, 2002. So, you know, 18 years of experience, they know how to do this, but this was the biggest one by far. And then Lucy Leach from the Miami chapter, she flew up and froze her bits off because it is cold up there. It might not be as cold there down in Virginia, relatively speaking, as it is for you up in Massachusetts. But, I mean, we had a cold front come in here in Florida. I'm like a, you know, 14-year-old adolescent boy. We had a cold front come through. So, I mean, look, yesterday it was like 75 degrees. Today, it's low 50s, like 52, 53.
Yikes.
It's cold down here. And so this poor South Floridian woman flew up and, you know, it was like in the 30s. I mean, it was literally freezing up in Virginia during the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me, because I called them on the phone just to find out how it went. And one of the things she said was, my luggage is completely empty. I am wearing everything I have. I am still cold.
I mean, there's something to be said about that of the, okay, yes, I understand. Like, it's like 10 degrees outside right now here in Massachusetts now that the sun is down. Though it was about the same temperature today. Like, it was literally like right at freezing because it was just warm enough that where the sun was hitting things, the snow was melting, and then it was forming black ice on the sidewalks. So the entire world is a skating rink. But yeah, I'm used to it. I was wearing a heavy coat and hat and heavy gloves and away we go. And I was wearing my snow boots. And but yeah, when you live in Florida, you don't have those things because heavy coats are expensive and heavy gloves are expensive. And it's a reasonable expense when you're shoveling every other weekend. It's not a reasonable expense when you live in a place that has alligators.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if the cold weather contributed to the lack of violence or not, but I'll tell you this. There were way more people who showed up than I think most people expected, because as Dexter said, usually at these VCDL lobby days, they get about 1,000 people. They were expecting 10,000. And the reports on this vary, and we may never know unless we get like satellite imagery and, you know, do a count. But when the mainstream media, and in this case, I mean, I haven't watched the news, but I have read something by USA Today, you know, they estimated like the low end of about 20,000. Other people are saying 30,000 to 50,000. Fox News, which is the other bound, you know, says like 60,000 or 70,000. you know, you take them, you average them out, and there were a lot of people. I mean, there were literally tens of thousands of people there. And so I was not expecting that. And in fact, there were so many people that not everyone was able to attend the rally because there was a line for the shuttle buses between where people were parking and then shuttling up to the rally site. That wait was measured in hours. And a lot of people just walked. And there was a huge line. So, okay, we all know about the freedom fence that was in the freedom fence, quote unquote, it's sarcastic, where the protesters were going together, and it had like one entrance, and they were going to be screening people with metal detectors. Dexter was there Sunday night, and he said that on Sunday night, people were lining up and camping out in front of it in order to get in, like on Black Friday or at a Star Wars premiere.
And note, camping out in freezing cold weather.
Well, I'm not sure what it was like yesterday night, but yeah, it was pretty cold.
Yeah, I've got to imagine it was not pleasant. It was warm up here about a few days ago, but it's been cold for like since like Friday. So I've got to imagine Virginia can't be too different, especially since the daytime temperature today here and there was exactly the same, and we're like 500 miles apart. Either way, even a warm January evening is pretty darn cold, because let's face it. Yeah, we had a nice January thaw a couple of days ago, and it was up to the 70s, but still at nighttime, it drops down. It was dropping down probably into the low 40s, which if you're in a tent and you're laying on like an air mattress on the ground, that is no bueno. So yeah,
no, the ground just sucks that body heat away.
Yeah. So yeah. So these are some hard MRFers out there.
Yeah, very committed. And so I think at this point, especially by the time people hear this recording, they will have seen the pictures. And there were a lot of people. There were more people outside the Freedom Fence. I mean, obviously, duh. But there were a lot of people who didn't want to go in because they were open carrying. And some of the interesting things that I saw were, you know, putting the lie to the whole, this was a white supremacist thing. I saw pictures of black people open carrying ARs. I saw brown people, and I don't know if they're Hispanic, Middle Eastern, doesn't matter, but they're open carrying ARs. I saw people who, and not just Dexter and Lucy from Pink Pistols, but people who, I mean, it's rumored they might have been Antifa, and they have the, you know, gun rights are gay rights, and, you know, gun control hurts gay people, and the rainbow Gadsden flags were like everywhere, man. It was almost like a mini pride parade. It was really awesome. And I'm hearing all these reports about people who are saying, yeah, and we welcomed them, and it was great. So two interesting things happened. Well, I'm sure there were a lot of interesting things, but these are the two that I know about. There was like one guy who tried to start something, and there's video of him. It was taken by Ford Fisher. Ford Fisher is a gentleman who filmed me when I was up on the National Mall. He's a great guy. You should subscribe to his Patreon. And he was filming him. And this one guy is, you know, he was trying to start some violence, like, yeah, we should like totally storm the fence and stab that guy and start the revolution. And there are a bunch of people who shut him down right then and there. And it wasn't just a case of, no, be quiet, but it was like, no, you're advocating violence. This is peaceable. So one, that's not going to happen. And two, we know that you're trying to instigate. So, you know, get the F out of here with that attitude. And, you know, they didn't lay hands on him, but they shut it down quickly, and he was made to feel very not welcome. And so I thought that was awesome, because that was very self-policing.
Also, I got to say, I saw that too. I posted on my Facebook group, but I was, yeah, when I I had some spare time this morning, and so I sat down and popped open the bright. It was the Breitbart Facebook Live feed, and I was watching that and playing a nice game of NetHack. So I actually missed the very, very beginning of it because it's one of those. Most of the time, it was just nothing really going on. It was just a good protest. People talking, people having a good time, and you know, people supporting their rights. But yeah, then suddenly I heard heated voices. But even then, they were just having a stern disagreement. There was no violence. Uh-huh. There were no threats. There was no, I mean, even the instigator was very much a, I'm not here to fight with you. I had my thing to say. I disagree with you on that. And uh-huh. it was the least pretty thing that I saw, but if you want to compare that to a lot of the stuff that I see on a regular basis when covering political stuff, it was pretty tame.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing of interest that I saw was that some magnificent mad boys brought and assembled a guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am reasonably certain it did not actually function, but it sent a message because not only, you know, okay, that's recognizable because you got the little the stock thing for the neck, whatever it's called, the collar, and there's the blade. But right up on top, it said the penalty for treason is death.
Mm-hmm.
And whoo!
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool because when I was seeing all the memes that were leading up to this, and some were funny and some were, oh, geez, please don't. But someone said, you know, if you had any guts, you'd buy some of this cheap labor and you would assemble a gallows during this. And I thought, okay, yeah, that's kind of amusing. No one's going to do it. And then they show up with a freaking guillotine.
Well, that was a GoFundMe. You know, I saw the GoFundMe, and like by the time I saw it, it was like 300% funded.
Yeah, the police didn't like that.
Well, also, you mentioned the diversity of the crowd. I just mm-hmm. wanted to note the number of African American protesters there who were both open carrying firearms, but also open carrying Ralph Northam's yearbook page, where he still never said which one he was, but on his yearbook page, there's a picture of, you know, there's his fancy headshot, and there's a picture of his Corvette. And there's a little few pictures of this and that. And then there's a picture of two people drinking beers at a party, I assume. And one of them is in blackface and the other one is wearing a Klan hood. So, mm-hmm. yeah, not only did that happen, but it would happen. And he decided, you know what? That's what I want to put in my yearbook. Let me tell you, I put some silly stuff in my yearbook, too. And there's nothing in there that I'm still like, God knows, but it was 100 years, however old I am now. However long ago that was, I'm still proud of it. I still stand by it. I might not agree with everything I said back then because I've changed my mind, but it's not embarrassing that I said that. And so, yeah, the idea that this was always painted as a white supremacist group. And supposedly there were some dudes arrested in, I think, Maryland that were honest to God white supremacists, and the news has been talking about them left and right because they were planning on going to the rally. There's like 50,000 people there, and there were going to be three Peckerwoods there, and suddenly it's going to be a white supremacist rally. Versus, this is all because of the anti-gun actions of a governor who unapologetically put somebody in blackface and someone in a Klan hood on their yearbook photo and blazoned forever. So,
yeah. So pretty much a history of making bad decisions.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's like I've said to people, I have gotten loaded drunk. I enjoy a beverage from time to time, and there have been times when I might have had one too many. And that's also an affliction that Mel Gibson has. And I would note that under no circumstance have I ever asparaged the Jews or any other religion while I was hammered drunk, because I don't believe that. I mean, I have told my wife what her Christmas presents were one evening at a party when we were freshly married. because I had a little bit too much truth serum in me. But yeah, no, never said I had a problem with the Jews, because I don't have a problem with Jews. So the idea of putting something like this on your yearbook photo isn't just a bad decision, but there's also... He's supporting it. He's not afraid of it. He's not concerned about the Klan and blackface and minstrel shows and such things. So yeah, I'm mm-hmm. I'm disgusted by Governor Northam on every level possible. And the idea that he tried to paint the people that were standing up for their rights, as especially him being as snitty as he is. I mean, he declared they changed the rules on the Capitol. It used to be carry was allowed on Capitol grounds, and they changed the rules, so now it's not. And that includes lawmakers, though allegedly they're not enforcing it for lawmakers. So it applies to everybody, but it doesn't apply to everybody.
Possibly explains why there was a sheriff there who deputized one of the senators, and I didn't understand why. And maybe by deputizing him, he's now a police officer and then can carry despite the law.
Well, I also heard it was Cam Edwards was talking about how essentially they were just waving certain lawmakers around the metal detectors just because there was a huge crush being built up of just lawmakers trying to get in and get to work. And they just started just waving people through. And so, yeah, but interestingly enough, but meanwhile, Governor Northam seems to have major problems with selective enforcement of the laws when it comes to Second Amendment sanctuaries. So,
well, yeah. And I think that's what I was getting at, because, all right, we had this great showing, and I certainly hope that a message was sent. But I look at this guy's track record, and I look at how he's doubled down, and the state of Virginia is like 98% Second Amendment sanctuary, and he keeps doubling down. And considering all the stuff he did back all the way back to high school, it's like, you know, given this pattern of behavior, he will not learn from this. No. It'll just be, well, they didn't shoot it up, so our laws work, and that's fine. It was peaceable, so we can keep going.
Yeah. I mean, it rings back to Massachusetts several years ago when Mara Healey, under the cover of darkness, cast out an edict saying that the Massachusetts assault weapons ban was being enforced wrong all along. It's just like over 10 years. And it had been enforced wrong, and she is the true legal expert, and she knows how it's supposed to be enforced. And so now AR-15s are now de facto illegal and have always been illegal in the state of Massachusetts. And so therefore, anyone that has one in the safe, they're subject to arrest. But she's not gonna enforce it. You're okay. You bought it in good faith, so we'll look the other way. Uh-huh. That's nice. But essentially, when that went down, the Gun Owners Action League essentially just sent out an email to all its members saying, "We're holding a rally on the Capitol on Saturday," which came down on a Wednesday. So the email went out on a Thursday, and we got over 20,000 people to show up on Beacon Hill in Boston on the Saturday after the edict went through, and it was an amazing show of force.
Yeah, that's great on such short notice too.
Yeah, that's why I made the point of it, because yeah, it was one of those like, okay, let's do that. my wife and I went to the Children's Museum in Boston, which is a short walk away from Beacon Hill, and I dropped them off and said, all right, I'm gonna go to work. I'll meet you back here. And my wife and daughter went and played in the Children's Museum, and I went and cheered and clapped and showed some force and took some pictures. And all of that went down, but unfortunately, yeah, no, they didn't listen. Nobody cared, but that doesn't mean that you did nothing for it. Though what'll be interesting is when I looked at all of the news coverage, and just so you know, the Fox station, and I mean, it's Fox, so you know, let your stereotypes of Fox News fly on that. The Fox, I mean, like, I was literally looking at the Fox News building. It's right there, like across from the Capitol. And so in theory, they could have put a camera crew up on the roof of that building and gotten great shots of us. And I kept looking up and didn't see any cameras, and went on their website and found the coverage of all the major Boston stations. And almost all of them had coverage before or after the event. So they got there and there was maybe three or four people milling about. And that's it. And they were just talking about the rally. And it looked like there was maybe, you know, 10 or 15 people that showed up. So, but this one got news coverage. I mean, we've all seen it. So there's something to be said about that, was all the drama that both Northam and everybody was cooking up about this being the start of the Boogaloo. And this was going to be the start of the second American Civil War. And or second American Revolution, however you want to say it. So there was, all eyes were on Virginia for today. But I got to say, I ended up having to run some errands. And when I came back, I clicked back on that live feed, and I saw the black contractor bags and went, oh, I remember seeing this on Beacon Hill. Is the all right, time for us to go home. Somebody busted out a crate of contractor bags and just started handing them out to people. All right, here you go, contractor bags. And we policed that area like nobody's business. I guarantee there were nip bottles and cigarette packs that winos had dropped the night before, and those went into the bag and got hauled off. And so everything got cleaned up beautifully. And so, so that is something that I am really, really proud of. I love when protest groups come through, they do their thing. They show their force. They make their presence known. They chant, they cheer, they gather together, you know, you have fun. You see people, you know, and then at the end out come the contractor bags, you police up some trash, and you haul it all out of there. Versus you see other protests where after they leave and the place is just demolished, and it's just, you know, it's just sad on the, all right, you're peaceably assembling to do that, and you're doing it on public property, and you're just going to drop all your crap there.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing the after pictures from the Women's March after Trump was inaugurated, and it just looked filthy.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember if I saw any from the one in Boston. The one in Boston was pretty big, but yeah, I don't know if it was. I know there was a whole big thing for Obama's inauguration, and showing just that the mall was just completely destroyed after that. I don't know about Trump, though. I wonder about that. I honestly would be surprised if it also wasn't destroyed. I just didn't see any pictures of the aftermath.
Hmm.
One more thing on this, which I mean, it's just the coming days of people digesting, because I mean, there's days worth of footage, because so many people are live streaming and taking videos of this. So there's going to be a whole lot of stuff to sift through. I found something. This is off of Twitchy. This is Michelle Malkin's site, and it's in the show notes. Triggered NBC News correspondent Gabe Gutierrez tries to pass off the Pledge of Allegiance at Virginia gun rights rally as something very different. And he's got it's from his Twitter feed, and it's the Twitter quote is, "Chance of we will not comply from gun rights posters in Richmond." And if you play the video, it is them saying the Pledge of Allegiance. Also, another one I have, I'll throw this in the show notes too, but you can find it, is the Babylon Bee. And they said, "Meteor offers thoughts and prayers that someone would start some violence at gun rights rally." Oh, just the whole talk on white supremacists and state of emergency and all that. And supposedly, the state of emergency, I've heard that police have seen no police reports on any violent activity or any threats being made. Essentially, it was all just cut out of whole cloth.
What I have heard is that no one was arrested, period. So not only was there no violence, but just no one was arrested. There was no need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I'm getting at is the, I believe that, there was a lawsuit against Northam for the state of emergency, stating that he did it erroneously. He did it as political, action, and obviously that's true. There wasn't even anybody arrested for, somebody cussing out a police officer or littering or whatever, just any sort of mischief going on, or someone tried to carry their gun into the sterile zone, just thinking they could get away with it, or tried to sneak past that and got arrested for that. Nope. None of that. Nothing. Everybody behaved themselves. Even the people that disagreed. Clearly there was something going on for why Governor Northam declared a state of emergency. I mean, come on, state of emergency. That's no big deal. I mean, that's like hurricanes that are going to knock out power and destroy houses or other things, not a political rally.
Well, before you can mobilize the National Guard, you must first declare a state of emergency.
Okay. Well, it's still crap.
Well, yes, but I think that illuminates why he did it.
Yeah, in their little killdozers. Those little armored bobcats, those were kind of freaking me out. I'd never seen one of those before.
Yeah, I saw them on our Facebook page, and it looked like they had some sort of like a watchtower without the legs, just the little cupola thing on the bobcat arms. And I don't know if that was like a secure location for riot police.
It looks like kind of like a giant riot shield.
Well, I mean, it would, except for the fact that it is square. Mm-hmm. I mean, a riot shield would just be flat. This actually looks like a room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it honestly reminds me of like a set of four of those porta potties in terms of volume, and just put together like that.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't know if that was sort of a, tactical response platform where they could, jump in, and that's where they have the tear gas and the grenade launchers and things like that. I don't know. I've never seen it before. Yeah. It was kind of weird, but also it's like, oh, that's weirdly adorable.
Oh, your cute little baby killdozer. So yeah. And also you mentioned, Antifa. I think this is something I'll have to dive into a little bit more. I think that they did show up, or maybe some members did.
So what I've heard leads me to believe that it's all very fractured, because on the one hand, I heard that Antifa was showing up because they believe that people should be armed. I also heard that another branch of Antifa, Seven Hills, wherever the heck that is, had actually posted the names and pictures of known fascists so that people could, I don't know if it would be to stay away from them or to abuse them or take pictures or what. I'm somewhat disappointed that my face didn't get on there. I mean, of course, I'm not a fascist, but, when there are other people who are at the rally and they're being listed as fascist and I'm not, it's like, what? What am I doing wrong here? Once again, I get ignored. So it's not like I really wanted to be, but it's just I felt a weird sense of being overlooked. And so I don't really know what happened. I wonder if several of the chapters, well, it's not like they coordinate anyway, to the best of my knowledge. And some were going, no, we're going to come to disrupt. And others were going, we need to dox these people. And some chapters were going, we need to show up and actually protest. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's weird. We may never solve this mystery.
Yeah, I was impressed though that some of them sided with the Second Amendment activists, because I was telling that to my wife, just kind of giving her the lowdown, because of course she had no idea any of this was going down, because that's things that us gun nuts know about, but the normies don't, and she was surprised to hear that. But I'm like, well, no, a lot of them are steeped in the talk of revolution and all the revolutionaries. If you're wearing a Che Guevara shirt, hey, guess what? Che always tended to have an AK in his other hand. So, the idea of disarming the people, especially, I mean, again, if you think Trump is a fascist, why would you let him be the only one that can have the guns?
Well, just to back this up, I would like to point out that Karl Marx said, under no pretext should arms and ammunition be surrendered. Any attempt to disarm the workers must be frustrated by force if necessary.
Yeah, and also I've heard anti-gunners say, when people talked about, oh, Hitler was a huge gun control guy, and someone pointed out the fact that, you know what, Hitler actually relaxed a bunch of the gun laws from the Weimar Republic when he came into power. And I will quickly note that, he relaxed some of the laws of the Weimar Republic, but not if you were a Jew. If you were Jewish and you were a registered Jew, speaking of some of the gun laws that are being proposed in Virginia and federally by some of the presidential hopefuls on having gun permits and things like that and registration for gun owners. If you were a registered Jew, yeah, you couldn't even own like a cudgel. Like, that was a prohibited weapon for a Jew. If you were a Gentile in Nazi Germany, totally okay. So yeah, there's a lot to be said about the sinister nature of gun control.
So let's talk about something that is just as positive, but nowhere near as sinister at its base as a protest against gun control. So people who are fans of mine no doubt noticed the big freaking bomb that I dropped Sunday evening. Weird.
Oh, yeah.
So for those of you who don't know by now, and if you don't know, you're living under a rock, because like I posted this to the ACP Facebook page. I am pleased to announce that Chris Chang, the champion of the season 4 of Top Shot and firearms activist, gay rights activist, and all around wonderful guy.
And multiple appearances on the Assorted Calibers podcast show.
That's true. Yes. He has joined the board of directors for Operation Blazing Sword Pink Pistols. And this is just a major, major get. I had been after him since pretty much the moment OBS Incorporated and we needed a board of directors. And I go, Chris Chang, yes, he's a gunny and he's a gay man and he's on the West Coast. Let's get him. And he responded, thank you, Aaron. I appreciate it. I'm really flattered, but I'm so busy. I have to say no. And it's like, okay.
Actually, I remember the evening after, like, you first formally introduced me to him, and we had dinner together. Mm-hmm. And after that, I'm just like, we went up to my room to record the show where we talked with Wally about machine guns. Mm-hmm. And all that. And I'm like, is Chris with the Operation Blazing Sword and Pink Pistols? And you're like, no, he's not. I'm like, why not? He is so awesome. He's all the things that you would want for an advocate for your cause.
I know, but he was busy and I don't want to be a nag. And so last year when Nikki resigned to do her own thing, I needed another, at least one more board member, because I like having an odd numbered board.
Mm-hmm.
And
by the way, you need to introduce Nikki, because I think she deserves a little bit more than just being just plain old Nikki.
Oh, I'm sorry. Nikki Stallard, who was formerly on the OBS board, she was and is still with Pink Pistols in, oh gosh, is it San Diego or, I'm sorry, it's one of the California branches. I'm terribly sorry. And just a general firebrand on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And she
carries a 1911, so she's a lady after my own heart.
Right. So she went to do her own thing, and we wished her well. There's no hard feelings. We will continue to work with her. And so it's like, I'm looking for more members. I asked Chris, and once again, it was like, thank you, Aaron, so much. I appreciate it. I'm busy. And it's like, okay. And I'm trying to find other people, and I'm trying to find, and I really want, you know, a particular voice for this. And now we actually added three members to our board, but I wanted some diversity in there. And I didn't want just sexual diversity or racial diversity. I also wanted some political diversity. Okay, I don't actually know what Chris's politics are. I don't need to. I just figure because he lives in California, he's probably more liberal than I am. And that's okay. Because OBSPP, you know, we want to be as neutral as possible on everything except gun rights and queer rights. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted him so bad. But I tried getting other people who were smart and eloquent and provided a balance, and they all kept saying no and no and no. And it's, I don't really remember what it was that I said, but I think I sent a message to him saying, oh, Chris, I can't find, you know, that elusive last member of the board. And I just want you to know that I've got a door that's always going to be open for you. So when you get less busy, anytime you want, you can join up. And he's like, you know, I appreciate it. Thank you. And then he thinks about it for about a weekend. And then he says, you know what? Tell me more about what my duties are. And it's like, yes! And he agreed. And it was just so wonderful. I mean, it was almost like, you know, the person I've been proposing to constantly finally said yes. He said yes. And so that was fantastic. And in addition to him just being an awesome guy, I mean, I'm totally having a fangirl moment. All right, so he's a gunny. You know, he won a shooting contest. He is a gun owner in San Francisco. He is a firearms instructor. He is a professional. I know that he was.
He's currently working for, let's just say, a software company. I can't remember how open he is about it, but yeah.
Well, according to the press release, it doesn't say, just that he currently works in the financial technology space. Mm-hmm. But, well, see, I'm reading from this, and it says he later became a professional marksman for Bass Pro Shops in the three-gun competition circuit. I don't know if that means he's still doing it or if he did and he doesn't. But, okay, he's obviously a gunny. He's obviously super invested in it. He's a gay man in California. He's obviously super invested talking about gay rights. And anyone who's met him, anyone who's seen him on TV, anyone who has seen him give a speech, he's got just that infectious energy. He's smiling all the time. People like him. And he's eloquent. It just total package. And so, yes, I'm so very, very thrilled to have him. And he's already kicking butt, because I dropped this Sunday night because SHOT Show has started. And I couldn't attend SHOT Show, but he could, because, you know, he can drive to SHOT, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted it to make a splash, because honestly, SHOT Show is a really good time to make a splash. A lot of people are tossing out press releases. And the timing of the release was something I talked about with the board, because we wanted to release it so that people had time to read it, not like during SHOT when they're all doing things and they only notice it like at 9 o'clock at night. But I also didn't want to release it too early so that it could end up being talked about on Sunday instead of Monday. But just through, you know, good fortune, divine providence, whatever, I hit it at just the right time, and I released it at, I don't know, I think around 7:30 or 8 o'clock on Sunday. And so a lot of people saw it, and they were commenting, holy cow, but no one went to press with it. And at the same time I dropped it on social media, I sent it off to a whole bunch of different people. And I don't know if they've published it, other than Jackie Billings at guns.com. Thank you, Jackie. You're awesome. She posted an article about it, has this absolutely fantastic candid shot of Chris at the guns.com offices. you know, he's sitting down, he's got an AR, he's wearing a rainbow t-shirt, he's doing that smile of his, it's wonderful, I love it. And he told me today that when he was out at the gun shoot at SHOT, because, you know, people who go there to look at the guns, they also want to be able to test them, and so I've never been, but apparently on Monday, you can go to the range, and if you got a press pass, you can shoot all these new guns for free. It's always cool. And people were talking about him, and he'd already done one interview and had been asked to appear at another one. And it's like, yes, that's perfect. That's awesome. He had some questions to run past me. I'm going, yes, you're doing it exactly right. You know, you are a media guy. I have complete faith in your ability. You've already proven me correct. Just go forth and kick ass, young man. And so... And so, yeah, this is great. He's doing a great job. I'm so enthusiastic about this. I'm really, really happy to have him on the board. And so not only is he going to bring his wonderful personality and his enthusiasm, but he's also got that media presence. And so we will get more publicity, more recognition, more credibility just by having him associated with us. So this is a fantastic thing for us. I hope it's a fantastic thing for him. I'm going to do my best to make it not, you know, interfere with the things he's doing. And I'm just so pumped about this because I'm babbling.
That's awesome. I mean, that's really great. Like I said, this was a match made in heaven for a long time. I'm like, why is he not part of the group? I mean, he is just perfect for it. And I'm glad that he found the space to fit into it.
Oh, me too. So speaking of space and fitting things in, no, it's not dirty. David is actually going to talk to us about magazines, how to disassemble them, how to clean them, and how to reassemble them afterwards.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. In this segment, I'd like to discuss the care and feeding of the Garden Variety Detachable Box Magazine. As semi-automatic, magazine-fed handguns and rifles are the two most common categories of firearms currently encountered, I thought it would be good to go over some details about the different types of magazines, as well as some additional details on care and maintenance. Detachable magazines come in two main flavors, single-stack and double-stack. Single-stack magazines have the cartridges lined up one above another, creating an even column of rounds. This makes for a slim profile, but limits capacity in magazines of a reasonable length. In double-stack magazines, the cartridges are staggered in a zigzag pattern. Basically, two columns of rounds offset by half a cartridge diameter. This provides for more capacity in the same length, but at the cost of a wider magazine. Take a look at the link in the show notes labeled single-stack versus double-stack magazines for a visual of this. With double-column magazines, there are also two ways the cartridges can feed into the firearm's action, single-feed and double-feed. In single-feed, the rounds are positioned to the center line of the magazine and then stripped out by the firearm mechanism. All single-stack and the vast majority of double-stack handgun magazines operate this way. With double-feed, the rounds are presented first to one side, then the other, and are stripped out by the mechanism alternately left then right. Nearly all rifle and submachine gun magazines are of the double-stack, double-feed design. If you take a look at the link in the show notes labeled single-feed versus double-feed magazines, you'll see the difference more clearly. This characteristic also affects how these magazines are loaded. At the top of a magazine, the sides of the magazine body come towards the middle and hold the cartridges in place. These are called the feed lips. On a single-feed magazine, the space between the feed lips is smaller than the diameter of a cartridge. This means that when being loaded, the round must push down the follower, or preceding round, in front of the feed lips, and then be pushed to the back. Once in place, the pressure of the magazine's spring will hold the round against the inside of the feed lips and prevent it from coming out until needed. On double-feed magazines, the space between the feed lips is wider than a single cartridge. This means that you can load rounds into the magazine by aligning them at the back and pushing straight down until they're retained by the feed lip on one side or the other. Take another look at the link labeled single feed versus double feed magazines. Pay particular attention to how the cartridges are retained by the feed lips in both type of magazine. After some use, just like any other component, magazines need to be cleaned. At a minimum, the follower, feed lips, and outside of the magazine body should be wiped down with a solvent-dampened cloth. Avoid getting solvent or oil inside the magazine body, as this can contaminate the ammunition, potentially causing misfires, hangfires, or squibs. If they're really grungy, you may need to disassemble magazines for thorough cleaning. This can be simple, tricky, or profanity-laden, depending on the design. Before I go any further, a quick safety brief. We are dealing with compressed springs. Please wear eye protection and take reasonable precautions throughout this process. End of safety brief. The first thing to look for is a removable baseplate. Nearly all double-stack and many single-stack magazines are of this style. If the magazine doesn't have a removable baseplate, the disassembly process is usually fairly simple. With the empty magazine in hand, use a non-marring tool to depress the follower about halfway down. Then use a punch or pin through one of the witness holes to trap the spring in this position. Make sure the follower is still free to move. Invert the magazine, and the follower should fall out. This may require a little gentle shaking or slight manipulation. With the follower out, position the mouth of the magazine over a soft pad and carefully remove the crosspin. The spring will release with some force. Take note of the direction and orientation of the spring as it's removed from the magazine body. This is important for proper function. At this point, the magazine is fully disassembled and can be cleaned as normal. Again, make sure no solvent or oil is left on the spring or inside the magazine body. The only things that should be used on magazine springs or inside magazine bodies are dry lubes like MagSlick by Crunch Products. All magazines with removable base plates disassemble in a similar manner. First, remove the base plate. This may be easy, or it may require a special tool. Once the base plate is removed, there may be a locking plate in there, or only the spring and follower. The spring in double-stack magazines is also under tension, so make sure there's a way to control it before the base plate is all the way off. The follower may be attached to the magazine spring, or it may rest on top, held in place by spring pressure. Once again, take note of how things fit together. Reassembly for all types of magazines is generally the reverse of how they were taken apart. In addition to cleaning, is occasional maintenance. Springs will eventually weaken. They weaken from cycling, not from load. What I mean is that if I was to load a magazine and leave it in a comfortable environment for 50 years, that spring would be just as strong as the day it was loaded. Take that same magazine and load and unload it twice a day for a few months, and the spring will be noticeably weaker. One way to tell if it might be time to replace the magazine spring is if a specific magazine stops locking the slide or bolt back after firing the last round in a semi-automatic firearm. This can have other causes, but if it's a particular magazine and not others, replacing the spring is a simple solution. So the more a magazine is used, the sooner the spring will need to be replaced. Sourcing springs is not a problem. Wolf Gun Springs has springs for pretty much any firearm, both modern and vintage. They can also be sourced from Brownells and other resellers. In a future segment, I'll talk more about the history of detachable magazines, as well as some of the challenges associated with manufacturing them to acceptable quality. As usual, links will be in the show notes. That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me, or suggestions for future segments, or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
I gotta say, one thing that David missed on that, I was actually kind of surprised, I was waiting for it, he's so meticulous, is that I always stand by the number your magazines. It's something that's starting to become so ubiquitous that actually Magpul puts like a little grid on the side of their magazines and specifically gives instructions on how you color in the dots to number your magazines so that you know which number magazine you have. So if you have a function that might be magazine related, you can say, oh, that was magazine number 5, or if it's Magpul mags, magazine number 55. So that you can get an idea of if the same problem crops open of the other, like as David mentioned, if the slide or the bolt doesn't lock back on the last round, if that's suddenly happening always on magazine number 5, well, maybe that means magazine number 5 gets to go live off in the great magazine farm in the sky.
So I have a tool that I use for disassembly and cleaning. This is specifically for Glock magazines because I carry a Glock. And it's called the G-Tool, G-T-U-L, mm-hmm. and magazine disassembly tool. And so the G-Tool, well, it looks like a plastic letter C. And so you wrap it around the magazine and you squeeze it so that then when you take the other thing, and the other one looks a bit like a brush, and then there's the technical term is a pokey bit, so that you can use the pokey bit up to push through and dislodge the floor plate and then slide the... Wow, I just realized I sound completely illiterate talking about this. Mm-hmm. So you've got the cap on the magazine, but there's also a plate underneath it. And you know what? I'm not even going to try. Because I'm going to sound like an idiot. So, David, if you want to talk about the G-Tool for Glock magazines, you go ahead and do it. And for anyone else, I'll just have a link in the show notes, and you can look at it. I like it. It makes disassembling and cleaning and reassembling them just super-duper easy. It comes with my seal of approval.
Yeah, and versus me, where I've got a little... I bought it in the dollar store, a set of a dental pick and dental mirror set. And it was the dollar store is exactly where you want to buy it for gun cleaning, because you want the cheapest metal possible. So it's not hardened steel that's going to hurt your stuff. But yeah, I just use the backside of my dental pick to pop out my magazine. But at the same time, I do have a car magazine that does not have that little thing. I actually don't know what it's called. Either the little bottom follower on the spring. It's not a follower, but whatever it is, the part that's got the pokey bit.
Are so technical.
Yeah, I got the floor plate off and I launched that little sucker into creation, and I keep thinking it was going to turn up. I know that I did that with my Jennings pistol. I launched the mainspring for that across the room, and as soon as I'd ordered a replacement spring from Numrich, I found it. So I've got a replacement spring for a gun that is such garbage that I never shoot it. Oh, isn't that how things work in the gun world? Oddball found some videos of some knife attacks and shed some of his insights on them.
Welcome to Oddball's Corner Pocket. This week, I figured I'd talk about a video that friend of the show Carrie Sloan of We the Female posted to the ACP Facebook page. It's of a knife attack at a fast food place. The victim is waiting for his food while the attacker approaches. The attacker calmly reaches up and slashes his throat, starting at his ear and ending at his Adam's apple. Afterwards, the attacker ran away, while everyone else tried to figure out what the heck just happened. Fortunately, in this case, the victim survived. Also, the attacker was later caught and pled guilty to second-degree assault. Of course, that means that she only got hit with 7 years of jail for coldly walking up to someone and attempting to kill them. Carrie states that this is a wonderful example of why you should always have a defensive mindset. While I will not disagree with her that you should always be alert, I think this is an example of something else as well. Namely, this is a good example of what most knife attacks look like. If you haven't seen it, I'll have Weird put the video in the show notes. I want you to watch it. Don't worry, there's no blood or gore. Pay attention to when you can honestly say that the victim could notice the beginning of the attack. The attacker isn't exactly skilled, but there's still not a whole lot of time to notice and react to the attack. Also, I don't know about you, but I can barely see the blade at any time, much less ID it. And even then, I only know it's a knife because of the result. Sadly, this is a fairly standard knife attack. The attacker decides on their target, casually walks up to them, stabs or slashes them, and leaves. Honestly, there's a decent chance that this man received critical help faster because she ran. She probably could have walked out the door before anybody noticed what was going on. I'll throw another video in the show notes where the victim, sadly, isn't quite as lucky. This one is of a London street, and the victim is going down the road on a bicycle. The attacker recognizes him as being from a rival gang, runs across the street to intercept, stabs him, and makes off with the bike. The victim stands there for a moment, and then walks off camera seemingly unhurt. He would later die of that single stab wound. There's another video that I remember watching a while ago that played out similarly. The victim was walking down the sidewalk, and the attacker was walking in the opposite direction. The attacker stabbed the victim 3 times in rapid succession and just kept walking. The victim thought he had been punched, but that was all. A few seconds later, he fell over, and his 2 friends had no idea what happened. I have listed my martial arts credentials in the past, and I am a certified hand-to-hand self-defense instructor. When I'm asked what to do if attacked by a knife, I really have no good answer. While there are accounts of someone going into a rage and rushing people with a knife in plain sight, that's really the exception. Most of the time, a knife is kept hidden until the actual strike, and even then, the victim or witnesses may never actually see the blade, especially if the attacker is skilled in what they are doing. A while back, there were some folks discussing incidents where trained martial artists were killed by someone with a knife. There was a tendency to come to the conclusion that martial arts were useless and a waste of time. If you can't guess, I disagree with that. Often, in those particular instances, the martial artist simply didn't have a chance to react before it was too late, just like someone who was carrying a gun wouldn't have had time to deploy it. Like I said, there are instances, albeit rare, where there is something that someone would consider a proper knife fight, or the maniac charging with a knife, or similar. I have trained for that stuff, and I would like to think that I have a better chance of surviving than many. But notice that I said a chance of surviving. That's really what you're doing. A lot of the stand-up knife fights end with the, quote, winner, walking a couple blocks, and then falling dead of blood loss. If you end up in a fight with someone with a knife and you don't, I recommend running. Heck, I recommend running even if you do have a knife. Honestly, I think I'd rather deal with someone with a gun than with a knife. Recently, Weird talked about England and its knife laws. I actually understand their desire to ban the things, even if it's impossible to do and the wrong way to actually stop violent people from being violent. Knives, as weapons, can be silent, evil, nasty, bitey things that no one sees until there's a pool of blood. And frankly, that is terrifying. I wish I had a better advice than keep your eyes peeled, be trained, and have emergency medical supplies handy, but I don't. Well, I promise you that my next segment will be more upbeat. If you would like to read more of my thoughts, I write at gunscarstech.com. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions for further segments, I can be reached at oddball@gunscarstech.com. Or I can be reached on the Assorted Calibers podcast Facebook page. Until next time, have a good one.
Yeah, I don't think he stated this directly, but I've heard the aphorism enough times that in a knife fight, the winner is the one who goes to the hospital instead of the morgue.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, any sort of fair fight with a knife, it's like you're both going to get cut pretty badly. And I don't have any actual stats on this. This is fairly apocryphal, but I'm sure someone can pull it up somewhere. But it's one of those knives are actually more or less deadlier than guns because, all right, fine, a gun will put a hole through you. And unless it hits a particular vital organ, you know, you get to hospital within that golden amount of time, you'll be fine. But with knives, the way they cut, and they can cut deep into all sorts of blood vessels, and then the way the skin just sort of peels away, it's so much nastier.
Plus, I think Masayub said in one of his books, I've rarely seen a crime where someone was shot 20 or 30 times, but I've absolutely come on many knife attacks where there are 20 or 30 stab wounds. that you can just, I mean, I've heard the term used, the sewing machine, where you can just mm-hmm. work your hand up and down and just sewing machine your way across somebody. And when you put that many holes on people, even with like a 2-inch blade, you're going to find something that's important. I got to say that the video of that poor gentleman that lost his life, I was, Oddball and I were talking about this. Like, he was saying, I think I want to do a segment on this. And he was showing me the videos and I'm like, well, wait. I watched the video and was like, oh, what happened there? And then suddenly read fatal knife attack. I'm like, wait, is the dude that just walked away the one who died? And he goes, yep. And I just went, oh, that's terrifying. And so, by the mm-hmm. way, if you have not gone to the show notes and watched the video, like if you're one of those people that just listens to the podcast, don't go to the show notes. This is the show. You should go to the show notes and click on these videos because, yeah, the first video where the guy gets slashed across the face. Yeah, I was like, what, did she cut it with a straight razor? And Oddball's like, did you even see a knife? And I just like rewatched it and went, no, I just was just picturing just the way she moved. And it looked like might have been a straight razor. But yeah, I have no idea what the heck she cut him with. It doesn't show up in the video. And then this guy who gets killed for his bike, he just walks away like nothing happened. And that's the end of it. He was dead and he didn't even know it. And that's one thing that kind of hits close to home. Like actually, it was a couple of days ago, I was cooking dinner. I think it might have been first thing in the morning, making stuff for the slow cooker. And then I was picking something up and realized, oh, it came back red. I'm like, okay, there's blood coming from somewhere. I don't know where. I assume it's mine. And eventually I found that, yeah, I had nipped one of my fingers with one of my knives as I was cutting up all the vegetables for the for dinner. And yeah, if it's a sharp blade, sometimes you don't even notice it.
Wow. So I want to follow up on what you said about Masayub and the sewing machine effect. Couple weeks ago, I just stumbled upon a Conan O'Brien segment where he had this gentleman on whose name I have completely forgotten. We've established I'm terrible with names. And he was teaching Conan self-defense. And so he was teaching Conan how to defend himself from a knife fight. And so he had one of those, it actually looked like one of the markers that you use on the clear boards. Mm-hmm. And it was red. And so he was giving the pitch to Conan, and then he more or less just started attacking him, just completely out of nowhere. Conan didn't know what was happening, and we just saw all the fast moves, and by the time he was done, it was like, holy crap. I mean, that was measured in seconds, and there is red basically all up the left side of his chest, front and back, and there's some across his face, and good God.
Yep.
And so that was a very stunning illustration of just exactly how quickly you can fatally mess someone up with a knife.
Oh, yeah. And like Oddball said, with the thing that he didn't have the video of, a guy getting who thought he just got punched and realized that he was stabbed. There was a video that I saw of somebody in the UK who, yeah, it looked like he was, I think he was at an ATM and someone came up behind him and tapped him on the shoulder and it looked like they punched him, but instead there was a blade in his hand and he just stabbed him in the throat and that was the end of it. Knives can be super duper scary. And yeah, seeing going on YouTube, I'll dig up a couple of videos. There's some videos of some like knife experts that are just showing off. And when they just show up, it is just amazing on how quickly that blade finds places on the body that just you don't want a blade ever going anywhere near.
Okay, so I found the video and the gentleman's name is Stephen Ho. And okay, I know Conan is freakishly tall. I don't know if this gentleman is average height or below average because he does look like a slender man. But despite the obvious height and reach difference, he just owns Conan in every single way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Conan is like 6'4", and so this guy's probably about 5'10". So he's a little bit small, but he's not teeny tiny. But either way, he knows what he's doing and Conan does not.
So yeah, it's a fun video to watch. Because he gets picked on, and Conan is a good sport. But it's really sobering when you realize that marker could have been a knife, and Yeah, there's just no coming back from that.
So thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrespodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of our podcast, plus bonus contents like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump. And we've got a new thing. Oddball thought it was a good idea, and he thought we would all say, no, it's not a good idea. But no, we are doing Tremors Tuesday. And while you're listening to this, actually, Tremors 1 film track is already up on the normal Libsyn feed. So all the places where you get your podcasts, you can get the Tremors film track that way, or you can go to patreon.com and it's there for free. You can watch the movie Tremors. It's free on Netflix if you have a Netflix subscription, or if you've already got a copy of Tremors, let's face it, admit it, you do. You can join us for that, for Tremors Tuesday. It seems like it's fun.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's W.
That's weirdworld.com.
And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Yeah, I'm all over the place. You know, pinkpistols.org, blazingsword.org, lurking rhythmically, blue collar prepping. Oh, hey, I just appeared. Well, actually, I recorded it last week, but it just released today. I was a guest on The Peak, which is Rainier Arms' podcast. Ooh. And that released today. And I was interviewed by some very cool people, including Shelley Sargent, who you may not have heard of, but she's a friend of mine. And so that was really cool.
Well, that's awesome.
I got an amazing compliment, because I was told that this was the best interview they've ever done, because I came prepared, I had smooth transitions, and because I recorded locally, because I are a podcaster, even though we had some technical issues where I couldn't hear them sometimes and they couldn't hear me sometimes, it's like, no problem. I recorded my end locally. I'll just upload it to Google Docs, no worries. And they were like, oh yes, this is perfect.
Yeah, hint, hint, that happens to ACP all the time, and you'd never notice it.
Exactly. So go ahead and give it a listen. That's firearmsradio.tv/the-peak-009. There we go. That's my MI6 code number. I'm 009.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
I can speak English, and he can't. Oh my God, if you had heard all the... He couldn't even say oddball for crying out loud. And then he messed up hilarious and then tremors? Oh, it's shameful. So, our pronunciation is assorted. And so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night. Where in the balls? Oh...